Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back. Hello, hello, hello. 203-333-9422. Listen, before we get to Wayne Winston, I wanted to tell you about something. You know that I have been telling you for a long time that I feel that the treatment for obesity in this country, well, let me put it this way. I think that there are solutions to obesity that many of our doctors don't bother prescribing. And we have, at this point, a lot of for-profit companies and interests that have a vested interest in seeing us stay fat. Because like recovery from drug abuse, we know that there is a tremendous amount of quote-unquote failure. In other words, there are a lot of people that are invested when it comes to drug abuse with telling you that the only way that you can live a productive, good life is by being completely clean and never, ever touching another opiate in your life. But there's a huge, huge amount of science to show that a lot of people can live a very productive, good life on a different kind of a substance, methadone or Suboxone, and that they can do very well. And yet we have all these people making money off of telling people something that may be a myth. The same thing is true with obesity. There's a lot of diets that, you know, try and have you, you know, take their food or take their product or follow their whatever. And the truth is a lot of people gain the weight back. Because science will show that for obesity, it isn't just psychological. It isn't just about being able to have willpower forever and ever. Sometimes and often, when you have a certain amount of weight that you've already gained, there's a biological, physiological response to food that makes it much easier to gain it back. And there's a product out there, Wegovy, is one of the concentrations, Saxenda, Ozempic, you've heard on TV a lot. They're all made by the same company, Novo Nordisk, which is a Danish company. Full disclosure, I bought a few shares of it when this product worked for my husband, and I saw that it worked so well for him, and it worked so well for other members of my family. I was so encouraged by it that I bought a few shares. Believe me, not enough to make the world fall down, but just letting you know. And anyway, the thing is that only 1% of all of our doctors in the entire country apparently prescribe or pay attention to anything with respect to obesity. And there's a big story today in the paper about how hard it is for people who are overweight to get their doctors to prescribe this medicine to them. And it's pretty sad and pathetic, actually. And I just want to let you know about it. I want to let you know that if you're obese, that there really is a drug that seems to be working. Do I know if 20 years from now they're going to find out that it has some side effects and problems? I don't know. But they say that it's a game changer. You could look it up and read about it because the ingredient is called semaglutide. And there's a story today in the Times by Gina Collada how the doctor prescribed an obesity drug where her insurer called it vanity and her insurance company refused to cover it. The truth is it's not vanity to try and lose weight. I don't understand what's going on with these insurance companies. It's not vanity. Obesity is a major factor in people's outcome in COVID. We already know this. Obesity is a major factor in just about every disease, arthritis, joint problems, hip replacements, you name it. As we age, obesity is even a factor in getting Alzheimer's. It's a factor in just about everything. Having too much weight on us isn't healthy for us. You would think the insurance companies would be delighted to pay for a drug that they know works to help people take off weight. And instead, they're saying it's vanity. It's a bunch of BS. I can't stand it. That's my sound off for the day. Joining us right now is Wayne Winston. Hello, Wayne. I thought you were coming in today. We've been waiting for you.
Momentarily, I had to be in Hartford this morning. And sometimes the traffic guys don't work with me, so I'll be in there momentarily.
Oh, you're on your way. Okay, next time you just have to tell me. You just have to tell me what's what. All right, let me ask you something, Wayne, because we had a lot of people from a certain point of view call into the show in the first hour. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it, but let me give you the recap. In a school district, a very big, well-known school district in Illinois, Oak Park and Forest City, the rate of failure for SATs was 77% among black students. It was just around 50% for Hispanic students. It was 27% for Asian and 25% for white. And the school board recently decided that they are instructing, by directive, they are instructing teachers in the next academic year to take into account race and ethnicity in grading, and to, if you're black, to no longer penalize you if you don't show up at school or don't hand in assignments. And not only that, they've changed the grading of F as in Frank for failure. You will not be considered failing if you have over a 19 on your exam out of 100. And they claim that they're doing this because they want to take into account the diversity issues that have befallen people from COVID. But there's a lot of conversation on this radio show about, number one, it gives the school districts an out not to flag people with real special needs. Number two, this is my view, I think it's just downright offensive and racist to assume that if you're black, you shouldn't have the same standards as you're white in terms of going to school and doing your assignments. And I'm just wondering what you think about this. Do you think that race, equity, and inclusion should be interpreted this way in a public education system?
I do not. I think it's actually pretty appalling. COVID has been and have a universal effect on people physically. You know, we know the social dynamic that it's affected how kids deal with each other. You know, the whole back-to-school project, just like, you know, when kids are out during the summer and they have this falling off, well, they've been out for 2 years.
Yeah.
And so it's understandable that there would be some issues. But this thing is just about social promotion, and those additional things that they're doing is just absurd to me. It does not do our community well with anything that sounds or even reflects upon that. I mean, there's no question that there are challenges from the academic system prior to COVID. But this right here is way too much and a bridge too far for me. I think whoever had this idea and they thought it was a good idea to be helpful, not all good ideas are good. And I think it would do more harm than good, because the world is going to judge us by our academic achievements and on our reading levels. I mean, how will you reflect back on that? How will that student correct that later on in life? So I think that's a big problem. And I didn't get to read the whole article, but I'm glad that you brought it up on the show, because that is a no-go for me.
It also plays in, we're chatting with Wayne Winston, 203-333-9422. Don't you find it to be appallingly racist in the old-fashioned racist way in which we mean racist, which is an assumption that people of a certain race can't do as well? It's obnoxious. I would be offended.
And I am as well, because that is basically what that is saying. And that is a problem, because I don't know what their school board is made up of.
Me neither.
I will tell you.
Me neither.
Sometimes there are black people who mean well, and they will support something like that. You know, it's supposed to be, you know, leveling the playing field or taking into consideration the deficiencies or whatever the problems were before. I said this was an idea that is not a very good one. It's not good at all. And I think they should expect the students that they're going to have to step up and do what they have to do. Now, what they can do is arrange for additional training. Whatever it takes to get that done, that's where the money should go, to do as best they can in this limited period in school. Because, you know, kids going back to school has been a struggle. You know, teacher shortages and staffing has been a problem. You know, I don't know how this basic social promotion works to help that student. And so that's what bothers me the most, because somewhere those students will have to make that up. And then what's it like for next year? You know, so there's different ways to handle that. I think that somebody thought they had a way to do it. I don't get know what it's made up of, but that would not work for me. I would be having my son or daughter getting all that information correct, doing all of those things necessary. I think it's a big mistake.
Well, I wanted to tell you this. We're chatting with Wayne Winston, 203-333-9422. This is part of a national movement. There's a woman named Margaret Sullivan, who's the associate director at something called the Education Advisory Board, which sells consulting services to colleges and universities. And she believes that traditional classroom testing and homework performance fosters unconscious biases. Listen to this. So she doesn't think, she thinks that school districts should experiment with getting rid of 0 to 100 point scales and allowing students to retake tests and turn work in late. This is what she says. Coming under scrutiny are extra credit assignments because they favor students with more advantages. Well, you know what? If your extra credit assignment is to do another book report, your only advantage is that you're working hard to do another book report. One science teacher of Santa Clara, California, said he had stopped giving zeros and deducting points for late work. He also allowed unlimited retakes for quizzes and tests. That's what he wants to do. Okay. That's what individual students want to do. I guess in individual classrooms, people, students, teachers can experiment with the way they think best is a way to evaluate the performance of their own kids. But having a district-wide policy that directs teachers, directs them to not count, not turning in assignments and not showing up for class, I think it's horrendous. And I think it's demoralizing to teachers, Wayne. I think it's demoralizing to teachers. All right, let me move on. I got other things I want to talk to you about. There's so many things going on. I got to ask you this. A friend of mine said this morning, you got to ask Wayne what he thinks of this. So I'm going to ask you. Did you hear that Bradley Cooper, who is apparently transformed himself, if you look on social media, you'll see a picture of him. He's transformed himself with the aid of fabulous makeup and hair into the late Leonard Bernstein, who used to live here in Fairfield for many years, in order to inhabit him as an actor for this movie biopic Maestro, that he's being called a Jew face around the around social media, which is nasty anyway, and there because he had to do some kind of different nose that isn't his nose to look more like Leonard Bernstein. So people wear beards to look like this one, or they go bald to look like that one, whatever. And on social media, he's being criticized, and it's being criticized that they should have had a Jew with a big nose, an actual biological big nose, portray Leonard Bernstein and not Bradley Cooper. What do you think about that?
Boy, I think we get into some slippery slopes here. You know, if you're playing a role in a movie and you're the right star for it, I mean, he's a great actor. I would not have a problem with prosthetics. I mean, we make aliens, all kinds of things. I don't think it's co-opting anything at all. Now, I'm speaking from my perspective as a black man. We had this discussion, for example, with Denzel Washington.
Okay.
When he played Malcolm X.
Ah.
Well, Malcolm X was extremely light-skinned. He had red hair.
Was he really? Okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, that's why they call him red.
I didn't know that.
Light-skinned black man. You know, obviously Denzel is dark-skinned.
Mm-hmm.
So he puts the glasses on. He plays a role. And that basically laid that stuff to bed because his talent overshadowed the rest of that stuff.
Totally.
But it was a big deal to a degree. Like, hey, you know, so we got to, it's got to be a light-skinned guy, you know.
Oh.
There's another actor who played Martin Luther King. Oh, my God. I can't
Chadwick Boseman?
Name.
Chadwick Boseman, the guy who died?
No, he did. But Jeffrey, he's another famous actor.
Okay.
His name will come to you in a second.
Jeffrey Wright. Andrew's saying Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright.
Yes.
Okay.
Jeffrey Wright. He played Martin Luther King. And I met Jeffrey Wright as well. He's very light-skinned, but he played Martin Luther King. So when we get into the how light or how dark, especially for a movie role, if it's not debasing that character, I don't have a problem with that. So I don't think, again, that's a co-option because he's not trying to live that and portray that he's somebody that he's not. This is the acting thing. I think it falls into when someone typically, when you took to go from a race standpoint, when Marvel came out and they just did the movie Doctor Strange, where they had a white woman play an Asian man in the movie.
Okay. What did you say? A white woman played an Asian man?
Yes.
Wow.
And it was a major character in the Marvel movie. So a lot of people are like, hey, you couldn't find at least an Asian guy or someone that, you know, you had to have a white woman play it. And she had her hair shaved, and I can't think of her name offhand, but she's a very famous actress as well. And you'll see if you look up Doctor Strange. So there's discussions about that. There has to be perspective on them. I think movies sometimes can miss the mark. And when it's not exploitive, so to speak, I think it can go a long way to telling a great story. So that's my thought.
Yeah, I mean, my thought is 203-333-9422, we're chatting with Wayne Winston about casting and colorblinding. You know, Broadway shows have tried for years now to be colorblind in their casting. So, for example, when I just saw The Music Man, which is set in 1910 Iowa, you had the mayor's wife be black, I don't remember if the mayor was or he wasn't, but there was a lot of interracial casting. A lot of the salesmen were black. And you have to have a little bit of leap of faith to believe that 1910 Iowa was actually going to be as happily interracial as this cast wanted to make you think that it was. Now, it might have been, but I would say it might be unlikely. But you jump over that leap of faith because the show wasn't about race per se. And so you go with it because this way you give talented actors and actresses and singers a chance to do roles they otherwise wouldn't do. But on the other hand, I don't think you'd ever want to see Porgy and Bess cast with white people, although maybe you would. I don't know, Wayne, would you? It wasn't written that way.
Well, that's where, you know, when it comes to the arts, there's some ways that work and some that don't. There's some, you know, just straight out places you don't want to go. Blackface is off the table. You know, I mean, that goes without saying. Once in a while we get that, and that's what people make a lot of noise about.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's not, when it just has to do with being a creativity, you know, it's like taking a lot of these characters, even that we're seeing, and I'm using Marvel because they're pretty popular right now.
Yes, sure.
They're taking characters and they're making them female characters.
Mm.
And there's even a gay character that's in the latest one, you know, Miss Marvel. So they're taking this route, reflecting what's going on now that would not have flown even 10 years ago.
Wayne, stay there. We'll be right back with Wayne Winston. I do want to get into some of the real stuff that people are talking about, the social media, the white supremacy. We'll be right back.
And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
We have Wayne in the studio with us, Wayne Winston, 203-333-9422. Wayne, I saw this morning on Axios, I have to tell you this. This is a poll that they do every year, and here's what they say. Just 38% of Americans say they have something in common with people of another race, ethnic background, or political party. But it's 10 points higher than 6 months ago. 6 months ago, only 28% of Americans said they have something in common with people of another race, ethnic background, or political party. This month, the monthly national poll will look at polarization through the lens of social behavior. And starting last December, about 1,000 respondents each month were asked the last time they shared a meal with someone from a different racial or ethnic group or political party. So now political party is in there with racial or ethnic group, which is not where we were as a country. They also were asked, how much of anything do you think you have in common with Americans who identify as, and pick one, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, Democrats, Republicans, evangelical Christians, or agnostic? The percentage of Americans sharing a meal with someone in a different group stayed flat. But the share saying they have something in common with people from different groups rose from 28 to 38%. Do you know what? Okay, let me just look at this here. 50% of people had a meal with someone of a different race, ethnicity, or political party. Well, I should hope so. I should hope so. Over Memorial Day weekend, I'm there. I'm the over 50%. Isn't that crazy?
It shows
part. Wait, let me put your mic on. That'd be good.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it shows part of why we have such division. If you don't get to know someone, if you don't have a conversation with them, you're stuck with the stereotypes that you see that's in media or entertainment and so on. It can build an insensitivity. It can allow stereotypes to continue. You know,
I'm worried that with all these people not going back to work, work is one of the great assimilators.
Sure.
Work is one of the places where you have your stereotypes bump up against reality. And if people are staying home in their own pods, not only do I think it's incredibly selfish of this generation to stay home because they're not mentoring other young people and it's gross, and companies are going to coast for 5 years and then they're going to say, what the hell happened to us? Nobody knows how to do anything anymore. So I think it's very, very selfish on the macro level for people to stay home all the time. But I also think that there's going to be another aspect of this, which is the less mixing of people that you would normally not socialize with, but you meet them at work. And that's how you create friendships, and that's how you break stereotypes. What are we going to do if everybody keeps staying home?
Well, I think we have enough people at work because that is the melting pot for that. But remember, we have...
We don't have enough people at work anymore, Wayne. People are not going to work.
Now, let me clarify what I mean.
Okay.
After COVID, we have a lot of people who are still worried about that for whatever reasons. So, yes, it's not the same environment. But the encouraging thing about the statistics that you just read, it went from 25 to 35.
Yeah, 28 to 38.
Yeah,
it went better.
38.
It got better.
Okay. And that happened during the last few months. Why?
Yes.
Because people are finding reasons. They go like, I have to make this happen. That's why it was different before. People are making an effort to connect to people who they don't normally eat with or socialize with or people of color. So having discussions across the country, that is having an effect because that's a lot within that short length of time. You know, 10% is a lot.
Yeah, that's good. But I have to say, one out of two Americans polled out of 1,000 Americans say they haven't had a meal with someone of a different political party. They haven't had a... What does that mean? Does that mean that you're only socializing in groupthink with your own race and political... I was just astonished at that.
I'm
who asks
so
people their political party? I mean, maybe you know someone's race by seeing them, but do we always assume we know their politics too?
Well, I think people have a tendency to gel with the folks that make them comfortable.
That they already know.
You know, I mean, we have situations where they're like, hey, talk about what's going on, you know, get in their face. There's that going on the other side. You have people over here who are saying, I want to get to know my neighbor, you know. So those folks that are saying, I want to know my neighbor, they're working hard towards that. I was just in Southbury, Connecticut on Monday.
Tell me why.
Memorial Day.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is their two-year anniversary. Justice Southbury, a group of people who decided they would get together.
That's
protest.
The name, Justice Southbury?
Correct.
Okay.
They're on Facebook. Amazing. They decided that they had to do something about what happened when George Floyd died. So they have their anniversary, 105 consecutive weeks. That's 2 years.
Wow. That they're
Monday,
meeting.
That they meet and protest on the corner. There's
oh,
a green that they have
that.
Right on the corner of Southbury.
Interesting.
These are predominantly white people.
Really?
It's a mixed group. They have educators. They've got attorneys. They've got regular folk. And they had their anniversary. It was my great pleasure to speak there. Rick, his daughter Julia, they are phenomenal. And what it's all about, the social justice aspect. Now, you get people driving by, you know, hey, up yours. The majority of people are blowing a horn still. They have remained on point for 2 years.
Blowing the horn
years.
In support.
Because the ones that don't want you, they're calling you other things, so
I
we
gotcha.
Know what that is.
Wayne, let's go to the phones. We have Ron from Trumbull. You're part of the conversation, Ron. Welcome to the show today. Wayne Winston.
How's it going, Ron?
Hi, Wayne. I enjoy it. Whenever you're on the show, I enjoy listening to you. Don't necessarily agree all the time, but I enjoy listening to you.
I appreciate that, man.
Every time we have a family dinner, which is usually on Sundays, there's a great mixture of political parties. I think I'm the only Republican, but we have interesting discussions about political views and so forth, and nobody gets upset.
Right.
Of course, it's family.
Right.
But of course, it's family, but nobody gets upset. They listen to what your opinion is and respect it. You're entitled to that. But another breaker in terms of chain breaker, if you want to call it that way, is sports. And activities
yes.
like I'm a barbershopper. There are plenty of people of color that sing barbershop.
Yes.
In fact, I was going to ask you, Wayne, do you sing? Because you got a great bass.
Wayne has a great voice.
You know, God
great speaking voice. Anyway.
God didn't give me that gift. I leave that for other people, man. I tried, but, you know, the dogs were...
Well, come to the professionals. Come to the professionals. We'll be able to tell you whether they should continue singing or go home.
Hey, I appreciate that, man. I have to come up there and visit. I mean, I do live in Trumbull anyway, so it's great to have somebody from
really?
Town. Yes, yes.
Well, we're the Coastal Courtsmen, and she, Lisa knows about us. But we rehearse at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church on Tuesdays. In fact, we have a show coming up this Sunday, and I can't remember where. Isn't that terrible? I got to figure that out before
you before you get in the car. That's right.
But community groups are great ways to breaking that
yes.
kind of
yes.
You get to know people on a whole different level, opposite of politics or religion or whatever the story is.
Sure.
And there seems to be a lack of volunteerism in the whole community as a whole, and I think that's a mistake. I remember George Bush, 1,000 Points of Light, volunteers, so
yes.
on and so forth. We've lost track of that.
Yes,
I think you're right, Ron, because my Kiwanis group, which is completely nonpartisan, is where I've gotten to know so many people in Weston, and it's only afterwards that I find out their political affiliation. I could care less anyway,
mm-hmm.
but I know them on such a different level that whatever might have divided us politically doesn't, because I know them as volunteers in my community, and I really like them, so it doesn't matter.
Service groups like that and Rotary are great.
They are.
That's fantastic, because you're together because you want to serve.
Yes.
That's right.
You want to do the best for the society. And you forget about what a lot of people's ways of life are, what they do for a living. I mean, basically, they're just for the...
Thanks,
really,
Ron.
You rely on the
well, phone. I'll try yeah. and encourage Wayne to come on Sunday to sing. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for the call. Wayne, I'm going to let you wrap it up. We're coming out onto the top of the hour.
Ron, thank you so much for your call. I mean, we are so much better when we're together. We communicate. That's the thing. Without communication, you know.
We're lost.
We are. And we keep those dangerous stereotypes. We are really great people. The majority of America, that's who we are. We just got to speak up more.
We got to speak up and we got to have dinner together.
Yes. Dinner, lunch.
Lunch.
Make an effort.
Make
an
effort.
To know your neighbor.
That's it. We'll be back next week with this, and we'll be back behind the mic tomorrow with more of the Lisa Wexler Show. Stay tuned for Norm Pattis from 12 to 2 and 2 to 6. It's Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli.